This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. The works of William Shakespeare were pretty much unknown in Germany until almost 100 years after they were written, and they weren't widely known until the mid-18th century. But by the time the Mendelssohn children were introduced to them in the early 19th century, Shakespeare's plays were almost as popular in Germany as the works of the country's national poet and Mendelssohn's family friend, Goethe. Most of the works were originally published in prose translation, but A Midsummer Night's Dream was the first play available in verse, and that's how Felix Mendelssohn first learned it. Growing up in a wealthy household that was also one of the intellectual centers of German cultural life, Felix, his older sister Fanny, and his younger siblings Rebecca and Paul all received extensive music instruction as part of their educations. Felix and Fanny showed amazing talent at very young ages, and one of the advantages Felix had as a budding young composer was access to his own orchestra, an ensemble of family and friends that got together in the Mendelssohn living room every other week or so to play through, among other things, his early compositions. Essentially, any musical inspiration young Felix might have had could go from paper to performance almost immediately. When Mendelssohn composed his overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream in July and August of 1826, he was midway between his 17th and 18th birthdays. Now, it's not surprising that an adolescent would be enthralled by this play. After all, it's about love, magic, and how supernatural powers can bend the annoying rules of powerful adults. What is surprising is that such an adolescent might express his enthusiasm by writing what some critics have called the most perfect piece of music ever written. At the beginning of July 1826, Felix jotted a note to Fanny. "I have grown accustomed to composing in our garden. There I've completed two piano pieces in A major and E minor. Today or tomorrow I am going to dream there the Midsummer Night's Dream. It is, however, an enormous audacity." End quote. Mendelssohn mentioned his idea to his older friend, the critic Adolf Bernhard Marx, who thought it was a lovely idea. And 3 days later, Mendelssohn presented Marx with an almost completed score of the overture. Marx wrote later that he looked it through and commented to young Felix that it was a perfectly acceptable overture, but that there was just one thing wrong. There was no Shakespeare in it. Felix flew into a rage, grabbed the score, and stomped off. Well, a few days later, Marx wrote, "The Mendelssohn's slim manservant appeared at my door and handed me an envelope with the words, 'A compliment from Mr. Felix.' When I opened it, great pieces of torn-up manuscript paper fell to the ground, along with a note from Felix reading, 'You are always right. But now, come and help.'" End quote. Well, Marx offered the advice that such a score, since it serves as a prologue, must give a true and complete reflection of the drama. This time, Mendelssohn agreed with him, went right back to work, and finished off the overture as we now know it. As Marx had suggested, the overture complements the play in terms of mood and character, the magical aura suggested by the opening woodwind chords. The scurrying violins dancing like the fairies in the moonlight. The The March of the Rustics, with some hee-haws for Nick Bottom wearing his ass's head. Moments of doubt and melancholy. The majesty of Duke Theseus's entrance to set things right. Tender nostalgia of the string's final theme flying up in the air like fleeting dreams. Mendelssohn's contemporaries seem to have fallen instantly in love with this work. Robert Schumann wrote, "It is an inspired moment the mature master made his first and highest flight." And Hector Berlioz, who was himself an obsessive Shakespearean, exclaimed in a letter to Mendelssohn, "I have never heard anything more deeply Shakespearean than your music." As his career developed, Mendelssohn moved on to other things, and A Midsummer Night's Dream remained a popular concert overture, without really being connected to the play as a whole. But in 1843, King Friedrich Wilhelm asked Mendelssohn to fill out his music for the play with settings of the songs and other bits of incidental music that might enliven a stage production. It was a very busy year for the composer, but the offer was too good to turn down, a chance to immerse himself once again in his favorite play and perhaps recapture some of the carefree spirit of his childhood. Mendelssohn ended up writing over an hour of incidental music for the play, both instrumental and vocal, some self-standing and some meant to be interwoven with the play's ongoing dialogue. Many of these pieces have become famous on their own, including the bustling scherzo, composed to accompany Puck's encounter with an elf, with its prominent and virtuosic solo for flute, there's the agitated intermezzo, as Puck's love potion has taken hold of the wrong lover. The elegiac nocturne. With its gorgeous horn solo, which serves as an entr'acte following Act 3 of the play. And the Wedding March, written for the Act 5 nuptials of Theseus and Hippolyta, and without which millions of couples in the years to follow would have been left standing at the altar, wondering just how to get on with their lives. Yeah. In his return to A Midsummer Night's Dream, Mendelssohn brought more than a decade of development and experience as a composer and orchestrator. But it's remarkable how all the music fits together, as if it were the product of a single happy moment of inspiration. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.